भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4। कैंटो 4 इज टाइटल्ड व्हाट क्रिएशन ऑफ द फोर्थ ऑर्डर। चैप्टर 25 कॉल्ड द कैरेक्टरिस्टिक्स ऑफ किंग पुरंजन and his text number 27. Ka ete nupata yeta ekadasa mahabhataha eta va lalanaha subru koyam tehi puraha saraha का इते नुपतायेता एकादास महाबतः एता वा लालनाः सुब्रु कोयं तेहि पुरः सरः का इते नुपतायेता एकादास महाबतः एतावा लालनाः सुब्रु कोयं तेहि पुरः सरः। के हु एते ऑल दिस अनुपतः फॉलोवर्स ये देहु ते यो एकादश 11 महाबतः वेरी पावरफुल बॉडीगार्ड्स एताः ऑल ऑफ दिस वा आल्सो लालनाः विमेन सुब्रुः ओ ब्यूटीफुल आईड वन। कः Who?
Who?
I am. This.
This.
Te.
Te.
Yo.
Yo.
Ahihi.
Ahihi.
The snake.
The snake.
Puraha.
Puraha.
In front.
In front.
Saraha.
Saraha.
Going.
Going.
Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. My dear lotus eyed, who are those 11 strong bodyguards with you? And who are those 10 specific servants? Who are those women following the 10 servants? And who is the snake that is preceding you? Translation responsively. My dear lotus eyed,
who are those
11 strong bodyguards
with you?
And who are those
10
specific servants?
Who are those
women following the 10
servants?
And who is the snake
that is
preceding you? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The 10 strong servants of the mind are the 5 working senses and the 5 knowledge gathering senses. All these 10 senses work under the aegis of the mind. The mind and the 10 senses combine to become 11 strong bodyguards. The hundreds of women under the jurisdiction of the senses are addressed here as Lalanaha. The mind works under the intelligence, and under the mind are the 10 senses, and under the 10 senses are innumerable desires to be fulfilled. All these, however, depend on the vital life force, which is here represented by the snake. As long as the vital life force is there, the mind works, and under the mind the senses work, and the senses give rise to so many material desires. Actually, the living entity, known as Puranjana, is embarrassed by so much paraphernalia. All these paraphernalia simply constitutes different sources of anxiety. But one who is surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and who leaves all business to Him is freed from such anxieties. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj advises a person who has taken to the materialistic way of life, which is never permanent but always temporary, to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and leave aside all his so-called responsibilities in order to get free from all anxieties. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Shabshuru Metam Yena Tasme Sri Guru Yena Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutam Swayam Rupa Kadaham Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna. My dear lotus eye, who are those 11 strong bodyguards with you? And who are those 10 specific servants? Who are those women following the 10 servants? And who is the snake that is preceding you? Why is this canto called Creation of the Fourth Order? Anyone? It's more than the fourth generation, somewhat correct, yes. So where is this three generations prior to this fourth one? It's more than a generation here. So just a quick overview. First order is Lord Brahma. Yeah, because we're talking about creation in the material world. So he's talking about Visarga. Secondary creation. So first order is Lord Brahma. So after getting enlightenment, Lord Brahma then started creating, started populating. Four Kumaras appeared from him. They didn't want to create progeny to populate the universe. And then after that, 10 sons came from Lord Brahma. The 10 sons like Narada Muni, Marichi, Angira and so on. Then Lord Brahma also had a daughter called Vak. Okay. But none of them wanted to actually create population, because that was one of, after creating all the elements, there was a need to populate the creation. So then, that was the first order, Lord Brahma. Second order then came to? Swayambhu Manu and his consort or wife is? Shatarupa. So they were favorable to actually populating the. They were favorable to progeny, for creating progeny. And from them, the third order came. The third order is who are the descendants of Swayambhu Manu and Shatarupa? Uttanapad, Priyavarta, Devahuti, Prashuti, Akuti. Okay, three daughters, two sons. So far the Bhagavatam has covered the pastime of Devahuti and Devahuti married who? Kardama Muni. You know why it's important to know this? They are our ancestors. Right? So all of us are sitting here as God family. So we are all related to them. So we are actually here a family. So it's good to know where our forefathers, how they are coming from. So Devahuti married Kardama And then from their marriage, who came? Lord Kapila. Okay, Lord Kapila came. And then Akuti married the sage Ruchi. Prashuti married Daksha. Okay, from Daksha, they got 16 daughters, and the youngest daughter's name is Sati. She married Lord Shiva. There was a pastime, Daksha pastime with Lord Shiva and all that, all covered. Right? Now we are in the lineage of King Uttanappa. Yes? So King Uttanappa, his famous son is Dhruva Maharaj. From Dhruva Maharaj came down to King Anga. From King Anga came down to
Vena.
Infamous Vena. Okay. Then from Vena came down to Prithu Maharaj, the glorious Prithu Maharaj. From Prithu Maharaj came down to Vijitashva, or also known as Antardana. Then from Antardana came down to Havirdana. From Havirdana came down to, there you go, that's the link, Prachinabahi. Right? So this pastime now, it's focused on Prachinabahi, the son of Havirdana. And Prachinabahi, King Prachinabahi has how many sons? 10 sons, Prachetas. Yes? So that Prachetas pastime is going on simultaneously with this pastime now when Narada Muni is with King Prachinabahi. Right? But there is another, in this lineage, there is another exalted personality who is playing a very influential role in the lives of certain individuals in this lineage. Narada Muni, yes. So Narada Muni appeared in the life of King Dhruva. And he also then appeared in the life of, in that pastime, he of course was also giving guidance to King Uttanappa. And now he is giving guidance to King Prachinabahi. But in this process we also learn that not only is Narada Muni being compassionate, we are also learning the various preaching techniques that Narada Muni is applying to give mercy on these conditioned living entities. Different styles for different people, different conditioned jivas. Like in the case of King Uttanappa. So first, in the preaching, before any preacher, these pure devotees or all the gurus that we know who are preaching, there is a need to determine the layout of the land, the environment, to assess the situation first, before they can even start preaching, correct? Like in the case of King Uttanappa, when Narada Muni appeared from the forest after giving darshan to Dhruva Maharaj, he appeared in the palace of King Uttanappa. How did he find King Uttanappa's situation there?
Lamentation.
He was in lamentation. King Uttanappa was lamenting. Okay, he was grief-stricken because he had allowed his son, 5-year-old son, Dhruva Maharaj, to go to the forest alone. Okay. So then the technique that Narada Muni applies here is one, to first, knowing that he was lamenting, he was actually morose, regretting. It was a role, a preaching role, to first comfort the person. So he says, Narada Muni says, don't worry about your son. He is already under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His fame, Dhruva Maharaj's fame, has already spread throughout the three worlds. He is already glorious. And because you have such a glorious son, you too will be glorious. Anyone hearing that, even though how sad you are, you suddenly feel, wow, okay, feel good. Right? So knowing that situation, he gave that kind of spiritual guidance. Then before that, in the forest, with Dhruva Maharaj, there was a different technique that Narada Muni applied. So here it was more of a teasing, provocative sort of layout of the land assessment. So it's in the forest, Dhruva Maharaj is there undergoing his mystic penances, mystic yoga. Narada Muni appears and he says, dear Dhruva, you're only 5 years old. Why do you want to try this difficult mystic penance process? It is not even easy for ordinary people. Even great sages have tried it. They found it very, very difficult. Go home and play with your toys. Eh? You're 5 years old. When you've grown up, then maybe you'll have a chance to continue with this mystic yoga system. So it's like provoking. You know? Go home. Wants to test the sincerity and determination of Dhruva Maharaj. So how does Dhruva Maharaj then respond? He says, no, I'm determined. I want to achieve my objective here. I want to get a kingdom glorious than anyone else who has achieved in this whole world, even beyond what my great-grandfathers have achieved. So, please have mercy on me. Give me guidance. This word mercy has got a magical impact on pure devotees. When we beg for mercy, they cannot refuse. Pure devotees are like Titikshava Karunika. They have to give mercy because they are naturally compassionate. So from that point where Dhruva Maharaj actually appeals to Narada Muni's mercy, then the preaching begins in the context of how and where Dhruva Maharaj is situated. The process of giving him the Harinam. At that time the Harinam was, what was the mantra given to Dhruva Maharaj? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. And then he got initiated too, in the jungle, in the forest. Second initiation was given where he said, make deity from the mud and the twigs and whatever that you find. And worship with whatever fruit and berries that you can have in the forest. So that kind of preaching was from where Dhruva Maharaj was, and he was taken elevated all the way up to devotional bhakti yoga. Now in this pastime, what's happening? Same thing. Narada Muni is approaching Prachinabhai. And King Prachinabhai is very famous for being involved in performing what kind of fruitive, what kind of activities? Fruitive activities.
Is it
animal sacrifice? Animal sacrifice. Okay. Is a karmakandi. And excuse me. And here too, Narada Muni has to lay out the, get the assessment, the, get the layout of the land first here with King Prachinabhai. And bear in mind, this is going on, this pastime is going on simultaneously while the Prachetas are having their pastime with Lord Shiva. Right? So, Narada Muni says to Prachinabhai, what do you hope to achieve by performing all these fruitive activities? Then he tries to establish the prayojana, the goal. He tries to find a link, a common link with King Prachinabhai. He says, what is the aim of life? You are actually doing this because you want perfect happiness in your life, correct? Yes, right, correct, tick, agree. Then you want to get rid of all your miseries in your life, correct? Yes, right, agree, tick. Up to that point there was diplomacy. Then comes a strong punch right in the face. Narada Muni says, your process to achieve this is faulty, it's wrong. You cannot achieve happiness by engaging in material activities. And he follows up with a knockout punch. And what is the knockout punch? He gives this vision of all the animals who have been sacrificed waiting up there with their iron rods to pierce King Prachinabhai when he dies and goes there. It's like shock and awe treatment by Narada Muni. Immediately then a listener would say, gosh, the reaction would be, what have I been doing with my life all this while? Because when sacrifice takes place, animal sacrifice, the mantras need to be chanted in a perfect way so that the animal which is sacrificed gets a new life which would help to elevate its process in spiritual journey. But when the mantras are not chanted properly, the performer of these Vedic sacrifices, he takes on the liability of karma. That's why it wasn't performed correctly, even though King Prachinabhai was pious king. But the process that he was undertaking wasn't actually proper in the perfect in that sense. And therefore, he was accumulating more bondage, more karma. Then, just like how Dhruma Maharaj said, please have mercy on me, to Narada Muni, he too says, please help, give me mercy. My mind has been so entangled, my intelligence has been affected by being involved in fruitive activity. Now have mercy on me. So again, with that magical word mercy, what happens? Compassion is shown, and then the process of preaching actually begins. But here again, the process of preaching takes a different level, not like how Dhruva Maharaj was given the knowledge at a high level straight away. Here, because knowing his level is low at Karma Kanda level, he starts off with a story. Right? And these techniques of preaching, even our ISKCON Guru, Srila Prabhupada, and his Guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, they all followed in these footsteps of the previous exalted acharyas, the techniques that they applied. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, he is known as the Lion Guru. Okay? Very heavy. Correct? When he is walking on the road, when Mayavadis are walking on the other side, he'll walk across, catch them, and preach heavily to their face. But at the same time, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj was also very unorthodox, very creative in his preaching methods, just for the sake of giving compassion to the conditioned living souls. In what way was he unorthodox? He travels in flashy cars. He's a sannyasi, but he travels in flashy cars. He puts on coat, wears coat, okay, just for the sake of preaching, because he needs to connect at the level of the jivas that he's meeting. Prabhupada followed in the same process. Prabhupada, for different types of circumstances, based on time, place, circumstance, he preached accordingly to the environment, the situation. Like in the early days when he landed in the West, he took a very bold approach with just a pair of kartals, stood under a tree and just chanted straight in the face of everybody. They've never heard of this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. He stood under a tree and gave the holy name to everyone, which is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in your face sort of preaching, he just put it out there. But at the same time, he also was very soft-hearted when it came to the followers at that time who came on board to actually support Prabhupada and get his mercy. He was very caring, comforting, like a father figure, teaching them the ABCs of Vedic philosophy from the very basics. And as they made advancement, those who were close to him, as they were undertaking more and more service for Prabhupada and more engaged in more devotional service, he started also being heavy on them in certain circumstances, depending on the time, place and circumstances. Like in the case of the Juhu Temple project in India, we know how difficult it was. We have read the pastimes. Okay. The devotees who were engaged assisting Prabhupada in negotiating the deal with the owner, they were making mistakes. But Prabhupada had to be heavy on the devotees. The preaching was heavy. But in that heaviness, he was teaching, educating them, still giving them compassion and mercy. Right? And today, Prabhupada's initiating gurus, his disciples in ISKCON, they are following in this mood of the great acharyas. When they actually come to give class to us, they are of course, preaching, but then when we have darshan one-on-one, they need to assess us. Okay? How deeply this individual is engrossed in sense gratuities, sense activities. Okay? They need to assess, maybe we got what, flashy cars, another 5 parked at home, we got 20 investment properties, aiming to get another 5. They actually build a relationship to know where these individuals are. And based on that level, then the mercy comes. And through that process, we have made some progress and are making progress to be where we are today and aspiring where we want to be. So, this Puranjana story then begins. So, we have heard in the previous classes, City of Nine Gates, right? We know what the City of Nine Gates is, which is the
body,
right? And we also know who Puranjana is. Who is Puranjana? Living entity. Is he real? Does he exist? Okay. The living entity exists, but in the story, he's fictitious. Right? Because it's an allegorical story of the life of King Prachinabhai himself. So he talked about the environment where the body is the body is actually the framework into which the living entity comes. That framework is made up of all the material elements. Here it is pictured as a very nice, beautiful garden. You know, so many intoxicating, attracting elements are in the framework. And this is all coming from the Mahatattva. Mahavishnu, when he, in the process of creation, we know he glanced, there was Pradhan and he became Mahatattva. Mahatattva contains all these elements. It's got the 5 gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether. And it's got the 5 sense objects or tanmatra. What are they? Smell, sound, taste,
touch,
form. Okay, then we have 5 knowledge acquiring senses. What are they? Speech, tongue, ears, eyes, nose. Then we've got the 5 working senses. What are they? Hands, legs, speech, anus and the genitals. So, this 20 plus the false ego, this is the framework. From Mahatattva it comes, and this is what the living entity is now. It's got a body which is actually made up of all these elements. And these are all stimuli. These actually give all the various distractions to the living entity. So this is why here in this verse, it says, actually the living entity known as Puranjana is embarrassed by so much paraphernalia. All this paraphernalia simply constitutes different sources of anxiety. Because Puranjana now, he's surrounded by all these wonderful attractions or distractions. He goes further and further away from Lord Krishna. He continues to forget more and more about his constitutional identity. And to make it worse, now a woman has come into the picture. Right? So, Prabhupada says, the biggest trap, the biggest snare of Maya in the material world is association between male and female. So here, in this allegorical story, the female represents what? Material intelligence. Okay? So material intelligence, when it sees all this paraphernalia, it gets contaminated even more and more, and it gets drawn to all this, using all these sensory stimuli, the framework which is in, it's surrounded by, it's got so many things. Where do I start? It feels like that. The living entity is so bamboozled, it's bewildered. Where do I start? Where? It's like I'm being in a candy store here, like you put a child in a candy store. Okay? Wow, this is so good. They put that down. Look at this. This is bigger. Wow, look at that one. You do not know where to start. Or even adults, you put them to a, take them to an IT store. Oh, look at this gadget, oh, new brand, latest brand of phone or whatever. So there is so much of sensory bombardment that the jiva begins to lose its connection with Krishna. And ultimately, deep down, the root of all this is lust. What is lust? Where does lust come from? Everything that exists in the material world exists in a perverted reflection form of what exists in the spiritual world. So, lust comes from the spiritual world. But lust in the spiritual world doesn't have the effect like what we are now hearing here in this material context. Lust, as we know, has different forms. Lust for association with the opposite sex. Basically, lust for sex, lust for pride, lust for wealth, lust for name, fame. So many ways the lust works on us. But in the spiritual world, there is spiritual lust. It doesn't have the effect. Spiritual lust is blissful. And what is bliss? Bliss is pure condensed happiness. There's no tinge of contamination. And the personification of bliss in the spiritual world is Srimati Radharani. And everyone there, even though they are engaged in these activities where there is this display of lust, the spiritual lust is all for pleasing the Supreme Lord Krishna. And this pleasing, this engagement takes in the various rasas, the five rasas of servitorship, of what? Shantaras, Dasharas, Vatsalya, Madhurya and Sakyaras, right? And the Adiras, the Supreme Ras who has all these, is Krishna himself. So there is perfect harmony. Everyone's happy. Krishna is in the center. Life is perfect. Eternal happiness, spiritual world. That's where we need to go. But then, how did we land here? We often hear this phrase, misuse of minute independence. Correct? What does that mean? Misuse of minute independence. We are all there, we are happily serving Krishna, or we were there. How did we misuse minute independence? The jiva is an eternal part and parcel of the Supreme Jiva, right? Lord Krishna. Mama imamsha jiva loke. Okay. And then he is actually an eternal servant there, or he or she, the jiva is an eternal servant where the relationship is jivere swarupa hoy krishnere nitya das. That's it, servant. But if all that is perfect, how then did that eternal relationship get broken? This question was posed to Prabhupada in the 70s in France. I heard a lecture recently where Prabhupada answered, and his technique in that answer was like using what here we have this allegory. He used an analogy. He used the analogy of dal rice sabji. This is in the 70s. So he said, when you have a perfect cook, dal rice sabji, the perfect cook can cook in wonderful, delicious tasting dishes in variety of ways where those enjoying it will never feel bored. They'll never go stale with those ingredients, those offerings. So while that is continuing, while there's happiness in that context, when the jiva starts to wonder, I wonder if there's anything more to this, he's happy. Okay, everything's happy with the perfect cook, the dal rice sabji is being prepared wonderfully, he's happy. But when he starts to question, I wonder if there's anything more than this, that's a fall down. That's where that real eternal love with Krishna is broken. So as the jiva then comes down into the material world, and as he comes in contact with the material world, that eternal real love gets transformed into lust in the mode of passion. Right? And that lust, as I said, it takes many forms. Based on all these senses which are surrounding the jiva, right, he's bombarded with all these stimuli. He just can't keep up with the bombardment. Maya is so strong, it gets drawn further and further and further away from Krishna. Right? Everyone, every conditioned jiva in the material world is affected by this lust. Right from the topmost Lord Brahma all the way down to the worm in the stool. Even Narada Muni was affected before he became Narada Muni. In the previous day of Lord Brahma, he was known as, what's his name? Uparbahana. Okay. In the previous day of Brahma, we know each day of Brahma is very, very, very long. How many billion years? 432. Okay. Many billions of years. Right. So in the previous day of Brahma, Narada Muni was a Gandharva. Uparbahana was his name. And he was very tall, very handsome, fantastic, attractive body. He was well respected by the other Gandharvas, the Apsaras there. Okay. And he was always an attraction to the opposite sex, the women, the Apsaras. So, and he too took advantage of the situation. He became a playboy. So one day, the demigods, they actually organized a Sankirtan festival, okay, to glorify the Supreme Lord. So Uparbahana turned up with his lusty women friends. Okay, so in that environment where songs which were sung to glorify Lord Krishna, he started singing with his lusty women friends. He himself was lusty. Inappropriate songs which were glorifying demigods. So those who were there got offended that he was actually putting the glories of the demigods on par with the glories of the Lord, Supreme Lord. So then what happened? They cursed him. They cursed him to take birth as the son of a maidservant, as a Shudra. And we know the pastime of how Narada Muni then, as the son of a maidservant, a Shudra, we know the pastime where his life then changed, where he, during the Chaturmasya months, he met these sages who were taking shelter, and how he, with their permission, enjoyed the remnants, and how he transformed and got the liberation to become Narada Muni. In fact, even Lord Brahma, topmost Lord Brahma, was affected by lust. In the early times of creation, as I said earlier, where he had the four Kumaras, the ten sons, the sages, then there was the daughter Vak. Remember? He was lusting after his own daughter. No one is spared. And Marichi had to advise him, this is not appropriate for you. You're doing something, you're displaying something which was never displayed by any Brahma previously. Neither will this display be shown by any Brahma in the future. So you've got to stop this. And Lord Brahma then became ashamed, he dropped that body and continued with his creation process. That body became the fog, took the form of fog in darkness. Right. And this lust can hit hitting, it can keep hitting one repeatedly. It's not just once, like, doesn't mean Lord Brahma has just overcome that lust. It keeps hitting one repeatedly. Like in the case of Lord Indra, how many times we... Yeah, he's an exalted personality, yes. We look up to Lord Indra. He's a king of demigods. Okay. Next, very soon, we're going to hear the pastimes of Govardhan Hill. The festival is around the corner. We see how his lust for pride, he was so lusty for pride, he got smashed by Lord Krishna. Then there was the other time where you would think that after that first incident that Lord Indra would have learned his lesson. He didn't. Okay. Then there was the pastime in the Parijata flower. Remember that? Okay. There was this demon. The demons were terrorizing the demigods. Okay. And what's the demon's name? Bomasura? He was terrorizing them, the demigods. King Indra then approached Lord Krishna for help. Lord Krishna stepped in. There was a big fight. Then there was peace restored. The demigods are situated in the rightful places. Lord Krishna then collected all the paraphernalia that were stolen by the asuras, and he wanted to return to King Indra. So he took all these paraphernalia to Indra Loka, and Satyabhama followed him. So followed Krishna, go to Indra Loka. So Lord Indra was very thankful. He received all the paraphernalia. Then on the way back, Krishna and Satyabhama, as they were coming back, Satyabhama saw the Parijata tree. Okay. Now before that, Rukmini, Krishna's queen, had also received a Parijata flower. She just got one flower. Satyabhama now wanted the whole tree. Okay. And this Parijata flower only is exists in the Swargaloka. So then Krishna, well, he's a supreme. He plucked the whole tree and said, here you go. So as they were coming, King Indra said, what are you doing? This is my tree. You can't take my tree. And it became so bad, there was a big fight between Indra and Krishna. So second time. Yeah. Then we saw in the recent past times, when Prithu Maharaj was doing the yagyas, what happened? Indra showed up again. Okay. He was worried that Prithu Maharaj was going to complete 100 Ashwamedha yagyas. He was appearing in various forms as bogus sannyasi's orders, and is like trying to disturb the yagya. You would think that we would learn. And that is King Indra who is being affected by this. So it is therefore consoling to know that when great exalted personalities like that are being affected, that we too would find it hard to deal with the lust, the effect of lust on us. So where does this lust actually live? What are the sitting places of this lust? Senses, mind, intelligence. Three places. This lust is Nitya Vairina Kama Rupena. The eternal enemy of the soul is in the form of lust. It's an eternal enemy. You can never conquer lust. Right? And it's sitting in these three places. Senses, mind, intelligence. So then here, where we see that Prahlad Maharaj advises who has taken to the materialistic way of life, which is never permanent but always temporary, to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and leave aside all his so-called responsibilities in order to get free from all anxieties. When the senses, when the mind, the intelligence get eroded, when the spiritual intelligence gets affected to become material intelligence, then there is more and more anxieties building up. Why? These anxieties come because of lust, younger brother called anger. When through these lusty activities we are achieving, we are trying to achieve, we are chasing after what we want, the material pursuits, when our desires are not fulfilled, and here we see there are hundreds of women under the jurisdiction of the senses, and they are the unfulfilled material desires. One after another, one after another, we are chasing, we are chasing, we are chasing, not fulfilled, and then anger sets in. Anger sets in, and then our intelligence gets degraded, the mode of ignorance sets in. So, lust at the initial point of contact, when the living entity comes in contact with matter, that eternal love transforms into lust in the mode of passion. And as it journeys through the effect of lust on the senses, the mind and intelligence, and the material desires are unfulfilled, this then further degrades in the form of anger in the mode of ignorance. So, what's the answer? What to do? Here Puranjana and the women are really now about to get it on. It's like the attraction is so strong. Answer is, regulate the senses with deliberate spiritual intelligence. Regulate the senses with deliberate spiritual intelligence, which simply means Krishna consciousness, which means performing devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj, he goes to school, he preaches to his friends about Lord Hari, he comes home, his father Hiranyakashipu puts him on his lap and says, "My dear son, tell me what you have learned in school today." Okay. Then the son, the 5-year-old son, tells the father, "Oh, best of the demons. Oh, best of the demons. Anyone who accepts illusion to be reality will always be in anxiety. So leave this demoniac nature. Chant the name of Lord Hari." Okay? And it gets worse for Prahlad Maharaj. So if the solution to regulate our senses is in Krishna consciousness, then we are all in the right place. Correct? We are so, so fortunate to be where we are today. At least we have found the beginning point to actually make a U-turn from where we have landed to go back to where we belong, the spiritual world. At the end of our life, the Shastras say, at the end of our life, we get to see a movie. A flashback of how we have lived life. Okay, but it's a quick one, it's fast forward. So we have a choice. Do we want to see the Puranjana movie? Or do we want to see the Back to Godhead movie? Okay. Do we want to see the Yamadutas come to screen the movie first of Puranjana? Or do we want to see the Vishnu Dutas come and screen the movie Back to Godhead first? Right? What do we want? Who said Yamadutas? Right? So we don't have much time on the face of this earth. Death is coming, right? We don't have much time. And we're being bombarded, but we're in the right place where we have got the solution, the perfect solution to remedy the situation. Just yesterday we had this sweet memorial for a dear departed devotee friend of ours, Sri Gaura. Right? Those who were here yesterday at the upstairs in the Prasadam Hall, It was nice to hear his glories as to how fixed he was in his devotional, his sadhana, his devotional practice. And one can only aspire to be a little bit like him. Not only that, who are those here who have elderly parents at home? Hands up, elderly parents. When you see your elderly parents, when you talk to your elderly parents, that is Krishna's mercy on us to show us the difficulties of old age, the anxieties that the jiva in that body, that decaying body, goes through. Because if we are fortunate to live, to go into old age, that is what we are going to face. So it's Krishna giving us the realization to say, I got to do something with my life. I got to become a better devotee than what I am now. Because we don't know when death is going to come, correct? We never know. It's around the corner. And the most awkward conversation you can have is, when you know someone is going to die, try having a conversation with that person. What do you talk about? Because you think that you're going to live forever, but this person in front of you is going to die. And you know that fact. The greatest boon that we can get in this lifetime is knowing when we are going to die. The greatest boon for Parikshit Maharaj was, he knew he had only how many days to live?
7 days.
And see what his life then got transformed into. Until we know when we are going to die, we wouldn't actually take this devotional service path very seriously with the intensity that it desires, that it needs. We know there's this wonderful pastime in the Mahabharata, yeah, where the question about what is amazing. Very quickly, I'll just share the pastime. In the forest, the Pandavas were in exile. Okay, Parikshit Maharaj and the four brothers. There was a Brahmana who was living nearby. One day, a deer came and stole his arani wood. The arani wood is a kind of wood that is used to start the yagya fires. So the Brahmana came to the Pandavas and asked for assistance, please go and get it back for me. A deer took it. So Yudhishthir Maharaj, what am I saying? Yudhishthir Maharaj. So Yudhishthir Maharaj then sends Bhima to look for the deer to bring back the wood. So he travels into the forest, comes to a body of water. And he's thirsty, he wants to drink, he hears a voice. He says, don't drink. Answer my questions first, otherwise you'll drop dead. He doesn't listen, Bhima being Bhima, he drops dead. Right? And then Yudhishthir Maharaj sends Arjuna. Same thing, he goes searching, comes to the same body of water, he sees Bhima, he too is thirsty, he wants to drink. The voice from, it's actually Yaksha, a servant of Lord Yamaraj. He says, answer my question first, otherwise you too will face the same consequence. Arjuna too doesn't listen and he too stops. Followed up with Sahadev and Nakula. Then finally Yudhishthir Maharaj comes there. There's this beautiful exchange of question and answers between Yaksha and Yudhishthir Maharaj. And one of the questions is, what is amazing? Yudhishthir Maharaj gives a beautiful, beautiful answer. Ahani ahani bhutani gachantiya yaha yamalayam shesha sthavaram icchanti kim ascharyam ataha param. Every day, hundreds and thousands of conditioned living entities are going to the abode of Yamaraj. But the one that is living thinks that he will live forever. That is amazing. Living life means living dynamically in a Krishna conscious way. We got to plan for death. Okay? Planning for death doesn't mean calling your lawyer and say, prepare my will. Planning for death doesn't mean sitting down with your partner and say, here are the passwords for all our joint accounts. Okay? If I die, you can still access the bank account to take my money. Planning for death means learning how to live a Krishna conscious life where at the end of breathing our last breath, we remember Krishna. Ante Narayana Smriti. We get one shot at this. One shot. Okay? So, all I can say is, as much as we are being bombarded by the senses, we need to learn how to regulate the senses by practicing devotional service in a sincere, determined mood like Dhruva Maharaj. And that would free us from all this anxiety and help us actually engage. We can't control or conquer lust. We can't. We can only learn how to spiritualize it. By using deliberate spiritual intelligence, we need to engage that in the service of Krishna. Like Hanuman, what did he do? He was angry. He flew to Lanka and he used his anger to burn Lanka with his tail. So like that, we just need to engage our senses in pleasing the Lord. And that means we got to work on the intelligence first. Here, Prabhupada talks about the 11 strong bodyguards. Indriyani parani ahur indriyevya param manaha manasastu parabuddhir yo buddhi prasustu saha. Indriyani parani ahur. Working senses are superior to dull matter. Indriyevya param manaha. The mind is superior to working senses. Right? Senses. Okay. Manasastu parabuddhir. Intelligence is superior to the mind. Okay. Yo buddhihi parasastu sa. The soul is superior to intelligence. So Prabhupada says, using intelligence, understand the constitutional position of the jiva in relation to Krishna and engage the mind in devotional service. That will solve the whole problem, Prabhupada says.
Transcendental loving
cure. Time's up. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Questions, comments, corrections? Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanande.
Hare.